It is so good to see you this morning. We welcome you to Edge Church today. And Gina and I have been away in the mountains for a week, and it just feels good to be back home. I tell you what, I want to thank you for being the kind of church that celebrates and is excited for Gina and I when we get to catch our breath for a little bit, because we had a great time, and it always feels good to come back home. It's kind of like sleeping in your own bed after you've been gone for a while. It just feels good, you know? It feels good to be standing right here on Sunday morning with you. So we're glad that you're here today. And this morning I want to talk to you a little bit about the vision of Edge Church, the vision of Edge Church. And I've been thinking this week about college majors, because graduation is coming up here in the next couple of months. And, you know, there's some really creative degree plans. Some of us are in college now. Others of us graduated. Some of us graduated like a really, really long time ago. But I want to just do a little survey this morning. How many of us changed our major at least one time when you were in college, okay? Yeah, that's several of us. They say the average student does several times. How many of you changed your major like at least two times, okay? Yeah, oh yeah, that's most of us. Yeah, maybe, how about three or more times? Anybody? Yeah, I changed mine. I had four different majors when I was in college. I started off as a undeclared major, you know, like the people that are really ambitious, you know, for their life, people that have a vision for their life, undeclared. And then I was going to be a coach, so I was going to major in kinesiology, and I did that for a semester. And then I was going to major in business. You know, I finally listened to my mom. I was like, okay, I'll major in business. And then after I took accounting, I was like, I got to get away from that. I'm going to go on over here to the communications department. And so the university said, well, you know, you can do that, but you know, the communication majors never find jobs. So are you sure that you want to do that? And I was like, I don't care. I have to graduate, you know. And I was like, I'm going to communicate every Sunday, so it doesn't matter, you know. It doesn't matter what it is. But sometimes we have to change those plans, don't we? And you know, in college, you kind of go through this process of self-discovery. You kind of find out, am I good at this or am I good at that? And you kind of refine and define where you're going to go for your life. And hopefully by your sophomore or junior year, you have a little clarity. You know, if you don't, you're going to be at school for a really, really long time. But hopefully you can figure that thing out, so you can figure out where you're going. You can find out the vision that you have for the future. And they have some really creative degree plans now. In fact, they have one called art therapy right now. Does that sound like fun? Sound like a cool deal? You get around, you finger paint with everybody that's going through adversity in their life, and you make people feel better. That sounds cool, doesn't it? Art therapy. And I went to a university where we had a poultry science division. Poultry science. What are you majoring in? Poultry science. Whoa. What do you do? Well, we love chickens. Walk, 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 walk. You know? How'd you decide to major in poultry science? You know, I was at Chick-fil-A, man, eating a sandwich, and I had a revelation from God and poultry sciences. Sounds awful, doesn't it? Here's the best major. This is so good. Turf and golf course management. Doesn't that sound good? If you want to just hang out on the fairway, you know, repair the sod a little bit, work on your drive, you know, pull some weeds. I don't know what you do when you major in that, but it sounds cool, doesn't it? Sounds really good. A lot of great degree plans. Floral management. Boy, that sounds like fun, doesn't it? Floral management. I don't know what you do there. Arrange flowers, I guess. Poetry, right? You want to make the big bucks. I majored in poetry, you know, that kind of thing. Hopefully, we find the vision that we have for our life, because, you know, a lot of people go through their entire life with an undeclared major, not really certain as to where they're going, not really certain about what their life is about, not really certain about what the future holds. Today, I want to talk to you about how you can develop a vision for your life, how you can develop God's vision for your life. We also want to talk to you a little bit about the vision of the Edge Church, because vision is contagious, and today we're calling this the 2020 experience, because we're getting focused on the vision of God. And a vision is simply a clear picture of where you want to go. I'm here now, but I want to go there in the future. And we ought to have a vision for all areas of our lives. I hope you have a vision for where you want to be spiritually. You know, if you could project into the future and see where you're going to be, and maybe 5 years or 10 years from now, spiritually, my walk with God, I'd like to be here. And I hope you have a vision for your life. If you're a parent, for your children, you know, I pray for my kids, and I teach my kids I challenge them. As a parent, you know, that's our responsibility, is to help our kids mature and to be godly young men and young women. And, I have an idea of what I'd like for their life to look like as a parent. You know, there's a lot of things they can fill in the blanks on, but I hope that they love God, and I hope that they marry well, and I hope that they have ambitions for their life, and I hope they live a life that honors Jesus Christ and those kind of things. And I have a vision for that, and so I'm training and teaching them along the way, hopefully, so that they'll hit the mark. And that's the goal in mind. I hope you have a vision for your finances, you know, where you want to be financially. Hope you have a vision for your marriage, if you're married. Your vision for your life. Because listen, when we don't have a vision for our life, what happens? We just chase our tails, don't we? Just chasing our tail. I had a cat growing up. The cat's name was Moetta. Everybody say Moetta. Moetta. And the reason we named her Moetta is because when we first got her, the people that gave her to us told us that she was a boy, and so we named her Mo. Her name was Mo. Mo the cat. Sounds cool, doesn't it? We went to the vet a couple weeks later, and the vet said, This is not a male cat. This is a female cat. And so we had to change the name to Moetta. Okay? Moetta. Now, I don't know how you get mixed up on that. You know, there are differences between male cats and female cats, and I don't know how all that happened, but somehow there was some confusion in the home, in the house, and so we came up with Moetta. But Moetta was a vicious tail chaser. That cat, for hours and hours and hours, would just chase that tail. She would look over, she would see it, she would spy it. She would take both paws, she would grab for it, and right about the time she was closing in for the kill, what would happen? She would turn, and then she would turn again. She would see it this way, and she would turn. She would just do that over and over. It would just make you tired watching that cat hop around. Sometimes she would actually get the tail and start chewing on it, and I was like, oh, that's a little too much for me to see right there. I don't know how that feels, but you know, when you chase your tail, what do? You expend a lot of energy, but you accomplish very little. When we don't have a clear vision for our families, for our lives, for our church, for our future, what happens? We accomplish so little, don't we? Very, 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 very little. Great organizations have clear vision. Great families, great churches, great people have clear vision for their life. And sometimes there are vision robbers. There are reasons that we don't see the vision of God. Sometimes it's past disappointments. Maybe you've been through some hurt in your life and you've lost the vision. You had the vision, but you went through some type of storm in your life, some type of adversity, and in doing that, you lost the vision. And sometimes past experiences are one of the greatest deterrent to us achieving the goals and the ambitions that God has for our lives. Sometimes it's just busyness. Did you know sometimes we can be so busy just filling in the blanks and checking the boxes and going through the routine of life that we don't ever pause and slow down enough to think about, okay, now what's the big picture? Where is this whole thing heading? Because we're just so busy in the moment. How can we begin to get the vision? How can we get the vision back? Maybe we've lost the vision. Because, you know, the vision is the thing that drives us. The vision is the thing that gets us up out of the bed when we're depressed and discouraged and when we don't know what to do. It's the vision of the future. It's the hope that God is taking us somewhere. It's those ambitions that we have in our life that drives us and drives us and drives us even when we feel beat up and we don't know what to do. The vision is so important. Well, I think the greatest visionary leader in the Old Testament might be the character of Nehemiah. Nehemiah in the Old Testament had a great vision from God. And to set the stage for the life of Nehemiah, we have to look at biblical and secular history, which records the fact that in the year 586, the Babylonian Empire came and wiped out the southern kingdom of Israel, known as Judah. And they destroyed the city of Jerusalem. They leveled the walls. They tore down the temple, that big temple that Solomon built. And all of its glory came tumbling down. Babylon just wiped them out. and they took 50,000 Jews back to Babylon. So now the Jewish people are exiled, they are slaves, they're nobody, they've been taken away from their homeland, and sometime later, the Persian Empire came in and destroyed the Babylonians. And the Persians came in and they said, you know, to the Jews, they said, if you guys want to go back home, that's fine. If you want to stay here in Babylon, that's fine too. And so some people started going back to Jerusalem. How many of you know this? The Jewish people have a relationship with the city of Jerusalem that is sacred and spiritual. It goes back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And I know that Muslims and Christians love the city of Jerusalem for different reasons as well. But the Jewish people, man, they have worshipped in the city of Jerusalem for far longer than anybody else. And there is a sacred relationship between the Jewish people and the city of Jerusalem. So now the Persian Empire has come in, and Nehemiah is the cupbearer of the king, meaning that he would taste and sample the king's food and wine before he would eat and drink. And in the ancient world, the cupbearer was like the most trusted confidant. The person that would eat the king's food before he would eat it had to be trusted, because people were always trying to kill the king. And so you would never put somebody as a cupbearer if you didn't have a lot of confidence in him. So Nehemiah is a Jewish man living in Babylon under a Persian ruler, but he is a very close confidant. He's in the inner circle, okay? He's a cabinet official, if you want to say that. And he's about to get a vision from God to go and to rebuild the walls around the city of Jerusalem. Now, we know that the second temple had been built. And so some of the Jews had gone back to Jerusalem. They had rebuilt the temple. Okay, so Solomon's temple was built. The Babylonians destroyed it. Everybody went away as exiles. And then some of the Jews came back. They rebuilt the temple, but the walls of Jerusalem were not intact. And you got to understand that in the ancient world, that if you don't have walls around a city, it doesn't matter how cool the temple is. It doesn't matter how many shopping strips that you have. It just doesn't matter, because people will come in and wipe that out. So a city was only as good as its walls. Now Nehemiah is motivated from the Lord. He has a vision from God to go back to the birthplace of his forefathers and to rebuild the walls that have been decimated around the city of Jerusalem. And I want to talk to you today from the story of Nehemiah about how to develop a 3D vision for your life. A 3D vision for your life. Here's the first thing that vision brings. Vision brings definition. Okay, write that down. Definition. It brings focus. It brings definition. Now notice Nehemiah chapter 2. And the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, seeing that you are not sick? And this is nothing but sadness of heart." And then I was very much afraid. And I said to the king, "Let the king live forever." This is like a page out of Nehemiah's journal here. "Why should my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" And verse 4, "Then the king said to me, 'What are you requesting?' And so I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said to the king, 'If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it.'" And it's beautiful that Nehemiah, he's been praying, and now God opens the door. The king says, "Hey, what's the problem, Nehemiah? Why are you so discouraged?" "Hey, I've got to go rebuild the city. I've got to go rebuild the walls of the city of Jerusalem." And Nehemiah had a clear vision of what he was called to do. I mean, it's interesting that he says here, "I want to rebuild the walls of the city, that I may rebuild it." Nehemiah realized he was not going back to Jerusalem to take pictures, to hang out, to talk to old friends. He wasn't even going to build other buildings. He wasn't going to build a stadium. He wasn't going to build a high-rise apartment. He wasn't going to build an office complex. He's going to build a wall. And when we have a clear vision from God as to what he's leading us to do and what our life is about, what happens? It begins to push out the things that are not a part of the vision, and it begins to push into the box the things that are a part of the vision. And listen, if you're going to succeed in life, You've got to be able to say no to the things that don't fit with the vision of your life, and you have to say yes to the things that do fit. If you're committed to everything, you'll be committed to nothing. And here at Edge Church, we really abide by that in so many ways. You know, there are so many different churches. There really are. Churches have different visions. And if you've been a part of this church, you know that our church is different. You know, I have people come in sometimes, they're like, "You're not from here, are you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not," you know. And I'm like, "I'm okay with that." I'm like, "Yeah, I know it's different. I mean, of course it's different. But why do we want to be like everybody else, right? Why do we want to be the same as everybody else? We need to figure out who we are and become that. And don't worry about this other stuff. Nehemiah is focused. Vision brings definition. It's kind of like Taco Bell is now serving breakfast. Did you guys know that? Is there something wrong with that? I love guacamole, but not for breakfast, right? Not on my cereal or my omelets. It's not good. Jamba Juice had a big sign over here at Southlands. They said, "We now serve coffee." This was this winter. I was like, that is the last place that I want to have mangoes and bananas in my coffee. Not doing it. There's something not right about that. Now, if I need a smoothie, I'm going to Jamba Juice, right? I love Jamba Juice, but I'm just not going to drink coffee at Jamba Juice. And I'm not going to eat breakfast at Taco Bell. You got to know who you are and what you're about. And the vision is a lens by which we make choices and by which we see the world. So we see everything through the vision. I hope your vision is tainted by the person of Jesus Christ. It should be. If you're a follower of Christ, everything you do and what you're about, you see through the vision, through that lens of Jesus Christ. And if it doesn't fit with the vision, then we don't do it. If your kids take violin, piano, and saxophone lessons, what will happen? They'd probably be mediocre at three instruments at best, right? But what if that kid began to take piano lessons and totally committed themselves to the piano? They might become a great pianist, right? And there's a sense when you can be doing so many things that you don't do the one thing. Every time you say no to what's not part of the vision, you say yes to the things God has called you to do. And there's a lot of programs in our church that we don't have that other churches have. And that's okay. It's a good thing because you know what? It keeps us focused on the main thing. It keeps us focused on our student ministries and our kids' ministries and our weekend services. Those are our biggest, biggest focuses. We do other things. There are other things that are important, but those are the big things. And when we say no to some other things, we can say yes to the things that God has called us to do. When I was growing up as a kid, my mom made me play in the church handbell choir. Can you believe that? Is that like the worst form of torture and punishment for a sixth grade boy? What are you doing this afternoon? I'm playing in the church handbell choir. Awful. They make you wear those white gloves, man. And I was a terrible musician. The only reason I was in the handbell choir is so they didn't have enough kids, right? Had there been auditions, I would have never been in it, you know? And so all the other kids could read music. We had some great musicians in our church, and some kids could they could ding and dong and all this kind of stuff. It was awesome. They put me, like, on the end, man. I played, like, two or three times the whole thing. I had, like, you know, E-flat minor seventh, you know, handbells. Like, at the end, you go, dun, 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 dun. You know, just wait the whole time, watch all the other kids play. They knew I couldn't play. So when I became lead pastor, I officially banned the handbell choir. Somebody say amen, right? No handbell choirs. Some people say I'm bitter. Doesn't fit with the vision. So vision brings definition. You know what it also, it brings dependence too. That's the second thing. A vision brings dependence upon God. Now, if you just have a task, if there's something that you can do and you don't need God, you can just go do that on your own. That's really not a vision. A vision is something that you know you have to have God's help for it to take place. God's got to be a part of it. Nehemiah said, if I'm going to build the walls of Jerusalem, I need God. I need the Lord. I hope you have a vision for your life that is bigger than what you can do. I hope it's so big that you get on your knees before God every day and say, God, this is huge. Apart from you, I can't do anything. You better jump in here and help me, God. I need some help. And you notice in chapter 2, verses 4 and 5, Hanani, one of my brothers, came with certain men from Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped and survived the exile and concerning Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant there is in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame, and the walls of Jerusalem are broken down, and its gates are destroyed by fire. And verse 4, as soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days as I continued fasting and praying before God. So Nehemiah has a vision from God to rebuild the walls. He's praying to God. Listen, when you get in prayer, when you get alone with God, that's when you're reminded how much you need Him. You want to get a clear vision for your life? How's your prayer life? Are you talking to God about it? If you don't talk to God, you'll never have clarity about what God wants you to do. The whole first chapter of Nehemiah is all about prayer and fasting. Nehemiah is seeking the heart of God. He talks to God long before he talks to the king. He doesn't talk to the king until God's already spoken to him. Once he got the word from God, then he talked to the king. But prayer will remind us how much we need God. And I believe that God wanted us to have this building. You know, I believe we're standing here today because our church has such a strong, defined vision. I was sneaking over here in the parking lot praying, God, give us the building. Nobody knew that, you know. God, give us the building. God, give us the building. And I pray that, and I didn't have any doubt that we could fill this place up, lead a lot of people to Christ, you know, be a part of some fantastic ministry. I had no doubt about that, but I also realized that God had to open the door. And if God didn't open the door, then we would never be here. And He did. And I'm so glad that He did. Prayer makes us dependent upon God. And we need to pray. And great visions have to ferment. I do believe this. You know, if you're going to get a great vision from God, it's not the kind of thing you just wake up one morning and go over to Taco Bell and get some breakfast, you know. And you're just like, oh, that's it. Great visions from God. You got to think about it. You got to pray about it. You got to ponder it. You might need to talk with some people about it. You got to get it formulated in your mind, but it has to ferment. It takes some time. That's what great visions are about, man. Take a little time. Don't get into such a hurry. And visions will be challenged. And I'm going to tell you, this is why we need God, because you will never do anything great for God that you will not be challenged on. Did you know that? Now, Nehemiah had problems. He had problems from the Jewish people that were going with him. They didn't think they could build the wall. You know, oh, the wall, it's too expensive. The people that live there are too mean and nasty. You know, we can't do this. We're exiles, blah, 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 all this. And then he had the people on the outside, Sanballat and Tobiah, were his biggest nemesis. These were the guys that were trying to take the life of Nehemiah because Nehemiah had a bigger vision for his life than they did. Did you know that? Sometimes when you have a bigger vision for your life than other people do, people will despise you, people will put you down, people will mock you, people will belittle you, people will try to discourage you. And it's all because you have a vision. And so that's why we got to be dependent upon God in those moments when people begin to challenge the vision. Nehemiah chapter 2 tells us about that. We got to be dependent upon God. But vision should be God-sized, and there's no way for them to be accomplished unless God intervenes. And if God's not required for a vision, it's just a task. That's all it is. God's not required, it's just a task. That's all it is. I love the Proverbs that says, where there is no vision, the people perish. Maybe you guys have heard that proverb before. There's another translation that says, where there is no vision, the people cast off restraint, meaning that people go back. And I found this true in life, that most people live the way they have always lived. I grew up in this kind of family. I'm going to live. I'm going to turn out just like my mom and dad. I've always lived this kind of life, and so I'll continue. I've always been addicted, so I'll just continue to be addicted. I've never managed my money, so I'll never manage my money. I've never really grown spiritually and walked with God, so I guess I just never will. Most people live the way they have always lived rather than seeing the vision of God. And if your life is going to be different, you have to see the vision. You have to see the vision of God. When you begin to see where God is taking you, it begins to remove you from where you have been and begins to catapult you into where he's leading you to go. So vision makes us dependent upon God. And here's the third thing it does. It brings design. Vision brings design. It brings a plan. And look at this in chapter 2 again, verse 6. And the king said to me, how long will you be gone and when will you return? He's like, okay, Nehemiah, you can go do this, but tell me what you're thinking. So it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given to the governors of the province of Babylon or beyond the river, that they may let me pass through until I come to Judah, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress of the temple and for the wall of the city and for the house that I shall occupy. And the king granted me what I asked, for the hand of God was upon me. So God gave him favor, and when God gave him favor, Nehemiah asked the king. Here's the beautiful thing. The king not only let Nehemiah build the walls, he paid for it. He said, you can have time off of work. Here's the wood. Here's the people. Here's the letters. What else do you need, Nehemiah? How can I make that happen? Had Nehemiah just decided he was going to go build the walls and not talk to the king, he wouldn't have had the resources. And it says the hand of God was on his life. Isn't that beautiful? Love that. Now here's Nehemiah's plan. Because listen, if you have a vision from God, but you don't have a plan, you just have a dream. That's all you've got. And the world is full of people that are dreamers. The world is full of people that have cool ideas. I have a lot of cool ideas. You have a lot of cool ideas. Show me a vision from God with a plan, and you can impact the world. Look at this. Here's Nehemiah. Here's what he did. Number one, he convinced the king to allow him to leave his service to rebuild the walls around the city that previously was a military threat. Number two, he convinced the king to pay for the building project. Number three, he motivated the king to write letters to the kings of the surrounding governors to allow him to pass through safely. Number four, he asked the king to work a deal with Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, to give him enough timber to build the gates. Number five, he asked the king for the title of the governorship of Judah. Number six, he organized and equipped the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And number seven, he built construction. Nehemiah had the vision from God, but he had a strategic plan in order to implement that. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that great? Nehemiah was a fantastic leader. So here's the question. Do you have a plan to carry out the vision that's in your life? What's your plan? How's your plan? What resources do you need? And Nehemiah begins to model all that for us. Now, we've been in a stage in our church where we've been moving into this new building. And it's been one of the greatest experiences spiritually that I've ever been a part of. And I think if you've been a member here for a while, you would probably say the same thing. It was a few months ago we were meeting at the school, and we just moved over here. Some of you that are new don't even know that. You know, I talk to people, they're like, really? You've only been here 3 or 4 months? And I forget that because, you know, because I'm here every week. But our church took a bold step of faith in December of 2012 to raise some funds to get into a building. And at that time, we did not know where that building was. We just knew God was leading us. God was stirring our hearts. God was directing us. And so we made some commitments, financially speaking, some financial commitments to raise some extra money above and beyond our normal giving so that we could keep the operations of the church going but have some extra funds to move into a building. And our church pledged $400,000 over 24 months. basically is what it was. And we thought, you know, we may be in the school for another year or two, and or maybe longer. We didn't know, but we just knew that we were going to start raising the money. Okay. Well, God opened the door for us to move here sooner than we thought. And so a year later, we were moved into this building with the renovations all done and, you know, the whole thing looking great. And we moved over here. And today, I'm happy to tell you that we have given a huge portion of the REACH project. Again, our goal was $400,000, and we have given all but about $65,000 to the project so far. Is that not great? Fantastic. And I was doing some math this morning. I think it's like we need like 16% more, I think is what it is. Some of you mathematic types can figure that out. What percentage is 65,000 of 400,000? I think it's about that. We're having a $25,000 gift given today, so that brings it down to about about 65,000. So we're really close, and a lot of that money is already pledged, by the way. It is. Now, at the same time, I will tell you this. If we had 100,000 more come in by the end of the year, it wouldn't be too much because we have a long list of things that need to be done on this building. There's a lot of things that need to be done. However, the first step we got to take is we got to finish this 65,000 out. And in doing that, what is it going to pay for? It's going to pay for the rent on this facility and the operations of it to the end of the year. We have a two-tier plan. When we negotiated the contract with the owner of this property, we negotiated a lease purchase. So in 36 months, we buy the property. We're leasing it now, but we're moving towards a purchase. And so the first year was set up around the REACH funds, the REACH project funds. That's what we call it. If you see the signs out there, REACH project, you'll know what it is. The REACH project is to pay for the rent and the operations of the building in 2014. Now in 2015 and 16, we're going to start moving towards the purchase of it, which is going to be even more exciting than what we're doing right now. Right now, we're still settling in, right? We're still trying to figure out how to get the lights to work, okay? And we're still trying to figure out everything else. We're making a lot of progress. But here's the great news. Our attendance is already up about 50 to 75% a week over where it was just in November. Did you know that? And so while our giving is increasing, we're doing wonderful there, and while we're doing great on our attendance, everything is going the right direction, we're still trying to finish strong. So here's what I want to encourage you to do. Because of the vision, again, it all goes back to the vision. If you look at the REACH project, but you don't understand the vision behind it, change lives, spiritual impact on the community, people being baptized today, addictions being broken, marriages being saved. If you pull the REACH project away from that, you don't understand what it is. It's about the people. But here's the great thing. When we have a building, we're able to maximize the impact on the people. And we're already seeing that just almost day one when we moved in here. Our church went to a whole new level just by moving into a facility. So facilities play a huge role in being able to impact people. And we want to do that. So I want to encourage you, if you've already made a pledge, man, be faithful. Finish. It's important. I'd love to finish that last $65,000 early, you know, if we can. It would help our church. And if you're new to Edge Church and you're like, man, I'm digging the chili, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, this is cool, I'm about it. There's a card there in your worship folder. Somebody hand me one of those REACH cards, that black thing. It looks like this. And if you'd say, man, I want to be on the team, I want to be a part of what God's doing here, I want to be a part of the vision, then we would love for you to make a commitment to the REACH project this year. It would be 2014. And the reason that a pledge is important, it just lets us plan. It just lets us be prepared to kind of know where we are. Are we there? Are we there? And whatever. And you can put that in the offering basket, or you can actually, mail that into the church office. And we would love that because, you know what? The vision is great. The vision is great. Now, Nehemiah gets to the wall, and he actually completes the wall in a record 52 days. Nobody thought it could be done that fast. And you notice in Nehemiah 6, 2 and 3, Sanballat and Geshem sent me a message, come let us meet together in the villages of the Ono Valley. But they were planning to harm me. And so I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave and go to you? Isn't that beautiful? Nehemiah says, I'm so focused on the vision, I can't do the silly stuff. By the way, you guys want to beat me up and harm me, so I'm not going anyway. But even if I was going to meet with you, I wouldn't do it, because what I'm doing on the wall is so much more important. And I will submit to you today that at Edge Church, we are on the wall. You are serving, you are giving, you are bringing your friends, you're making a difference in this community. And I know many of you have worked really, really hard for the church. And I want you to know I appreciate you. And I appreciate what you've done, the time and the energy and the commitment. But I want you to know this, you're doing a great thing for God. And you know, sacrifice doesn't feel like sacrifice when you see the difference that's being made, right? Families delayed vacations, took money out of retirement, sold cars and boats and motorcycles and all kinds of things to give to the REACH project. But you know what? It's all worth it. It's all worth it because we see the spiritual impact that is making. And that's why it's so exciting. That's why it's so exciting. So God has given us this 3D vision. It provides design, definition, and total dependence upon Him. Because Edge Church is not just about the walls, but it's about creating that place where lives can be changed.